go to a meeting that was sponsored by the anti-globalization movement in Russia, which is an NGO. NGO invited us to Spain as well. There was some noise being made, but we accepted expense-paid trip to Russia. The fact is that it was the anti-globalization movement that provided this transportation there. But in Spain, an NGO that was closely associated with the Spanish government, that was connected to people who were either currently or previously associated with the United Nations, that were governments from Mali and other places that also attended, that we were paid not just transportation, but we were given honorariums of significance. And it was an international conference. I used the Spanish thing just to show the hypocrisy of the United States government, that saying that somehow, suddenly, we became agents of a foreign government because we attended a conference in Russia. This is the most ridiculous, asinine, and the thing that makes
we're going to have to leave it there, Amali. Yeah. Amali Yeshitela, chair of the African People's Socialist Party. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
I'm Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Rise them up, KBOO 90.7. You don't know it's your girl, Tasha T.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. My name is Tammy, and with me is the fantastical, the bombastic, the delightful co-host of this here program, Althea Billing.
Hello. Good morning. How are we?
We are well. How are you feeling?
I'm good. As Tammy said, I'm a little flushed. We talk about it every week here. It's warm in the studio today. I just like to preface that, because if we sound flustered, that's why.
I brought
you're wearing like a sweat. You're still still geared up for like
mistake,
it being
huge.
rainy this morning. Yeah,
big mistake. Yeah, I was even I hung some laundry yesterday. Woke up this morning, had a little mist on it.
Yeah,
I didn't mind it.
I'm okay with the mist. I'm not mad at the weather, by the way. I'm mad that the weather hasn't translated to a difference in what's happening in our here studio, but
it's nice. It's it makes me think of this station has been around for so many years. I really do feel the decades percolating in the rug and in the walls, and I like it. I like it, even though the walls are painted. It's beautiful
over
here.
Over 50 years of radio,
boom,
sort of just weighing heavily on your skin in the form of it being like 80 degrees in here. Anyway, we're getting off track. This is The Gap on KBOO Portland, Friday talk radio for your ears on the airwaves. We like to do a two-parter type of show. That means that in the first half, we are doing interviews, oftentimes with activists and folks in the local community making change. Today, we have a news roundup, or as we like to call it, a roundhouse kick of news to your face. And we'll do that for half an hour and then come back at the bottom of the hour for our community question, where you, the listener, can turn Alchemy-like into a caller and chat with us about what we're talking about. Shall we get into it?
We have to get some sound effects in here.
Yeah,
alchemy thing. Doo-doo-doo-doo.
I like the alchemy. You know, I'm working on the bit. You know, people will get tired of hearing it, I'm sure, but it's fun to to streamline it.
When I first said it on the show, I was like, uh oh.
The alchemists are gonna call.
I don't know. I like esoteric and exoteric stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people in this town that are really into it. It's really
into alchemy.
Hey, you say law of attraction, ears will flutter.
Yeah,
I tell you, they fly here. That's I feel it, magnetism. Yeah, but just like you said, a news roundup. And today we're going outside in, so we're doing national news, and then we're gonna
we'll hit the local news. Yeah.
And this, I don't know, Thea, if you even approved this or not, but I really want to talk about what's going on with the race. The very slow race to the presidency.
Yeah. Well, Tammy said that she wants to talk about everybody running and that she has nicknames for all of them. And so I, like you, the listener, am eagerly awaiting this important information.
And if it's not, God forbid, not disrespectful or anything. It's just observations and not all of them, because there's a lot. There's a lot of people. Well, starting off with Trump. Who,
first of all, I'm not ready for it to be a presidential election.
Ready or not, here it comes.
I think everybody needs a 2-week vacation. If they're going to make us do another presidential election, everybody needs 2 weeks off.
They need to up the treat tax that they're giving everyone. Yeah. Everyone deserves a little treat.
Everybody deserves a little treat.
2 weeks
actually,
of treats.
2 weeks paid vacation just so you can handle what's about to happen.
Yeah, I want a morning Starbucks and an afternoon Peoples.
Ooh.
See, you like that? I want you like that. but yes, and
Tammy's prescriptions for living. Okay, go ahead.
Just gotta get coffee.
Yeah.
I got this list from. Okay, so there's a list. People are running for presidency. No one has been elected by their parties yet, and so everyone is really throwing their ring in the hat. Very slowly, and.
I think the idiom is throwing their hat in the ring, but what does that mean?
Ring in their hat? I don't even know.
Look, my hat's sitting over there. Chuck my ring in it. That means I'm ready.
That makes so much more sense.
Does it though?
Because it's like it's a game, and you throw rings into the hat.
Yeah, what you said makes sense.
Well,
sometimes idioms go back too far for us to. So if I was like, it's actually throw your hat in the ring, I'd be like, okay, and what does that mean? Riddle me that.
I would you know, there's a book of idioms.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, Thea would love to buy this for me.
I'll put it down in my notes app on my gift list. I'll work on it right now. Go ahead.
But speaking of gifts, the gift that keeps on giving is the folks running for presidency. And in this list, they also added how old everyone is going to be on Inauguration Day, which is, you know, I can understand if people are like, well, that's not necessary information. And I can see in some ways how people can take this information and be cruel and ageist about it, which is totally not my intention. So I don't even know if I'll bring it up or not, because
good preface,
I think
though.
That it is, it's a point that I'd like to make. So, of course, Trump is running, but we'll see, since he seems to he might be busy in court.
Yeah, you got indicted yesterday, huh?
Indentation.
I feel like it didn't even really make, it wasn't even the headline of the day.
How many headlines can we deal with a day?
Yeah.
Look,
how many indictments until something breaks loose, huh?
Wake that up. Nikki Haley, who was the former governor for South Carolina and also a Trump-appointed U.N. ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
Vivek Ramaswamy, who is, and I quote, his whole tagline is, quote, anti-woke. So that's his deal. And he'll be supposedly 39 years old on Inauguration Day.
What do you say supposedly for?
Because maybe he won't make it to, like, he won't
well,
be
I think
there
he'll,
for Inauguration
I,
Day.
Okay.
Well, he'll be 39 either way.
He'll be
on the
39
date.
Regardless of whether he's being inaugurated.
Yes.
How about that?
Thank you. So he'll be 39 years old, which is closer to my age. So I'm just kind of like, oh, well, what? Asa Hutchinson, who's a former governor for Arkansas, who will be 74. Tim Scott, senator from South Carolina, 59. Mike Pence.
We remember him.
Former vice president, who will be 65.
Social Security.
Oh, boom, there it is.
Good for him.
Well, just like the millennials, he's not going to retire either.
No.
Got me. Ron DeSantis, who is the governor for This Is Where Woke Comes to Die, Florida, will be 46. Shocking. I thought he was way older considering all of his commentary on things. And speaking of commentary, Larry Elder, who's a conservative talk show host, radio talk show host, and also did a whole campaign against the governor Newsom, which failed.
Okay.
This is my favorite. Chris, let's shut down the main tolls on George Washington Bridge on the first day of school during rush hour morning traffic. Chris Christie.
Mm,
former, that's say his full name if you're going to say his
sorry.
Name.
Oh, sorry. Throwback.
Yeah, that is a throwback. People thought I forgot.
What is he doing? He's not
what
the
is
governor
he doing?
Anymore.
He's a former governor for New Jersey, and he's going to run for presidency.
Okay.
Well. He was in that scandal... in what was it
Bridgegate
was it 1640?
Can I say
yeah please
that, Bridgegate in particular was like when I was like maybe we need to give up the whole dash gate moniker for every scandal. Maybe we could come up with something else.
Well, Watergate was actually just the name of the hotel, you know?
I know. To say nothing of Watergate, but it's just that every scandal is a gate.
Going back to idioms, you know, maybe we need to brush them up
and maybe it's just that bridges and gates are both like, you know, objects of infrastructure. So I don't know. I didn't. That one I was like, maybe we should just remember what a scandal is because it feels overused.
Mm.
Anyway. I mean, is he a lobbyist now? I'm working on figuring out what he's doing. Where's his LinkedIn? Chris? We all remember the bridge thing.
George Washington Bridge, you'll never forget that. Mm. Doug Burnham, who is the governor for North Carolina, will be 68 on Inauguration Day. And that's on the Republican side. Right. On the Democrat side, Joe Biden will be running for presidency again, and he would be 82 years old. Robert F. Kennedy, I can't believe I'm even reading this. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who, and this is how the article described him, anti-vaccine activist,
mm-hmm.
who would be 71 years old. And then this is really the cream on the pie. Marianne Williamson, who is a self-help author, she would be 72 years old. And this is directly from the New York Times. Self-help author, former spiritual advisor to Oprah, is running for a second time. Her unsuccessful 2020 campaign, she called for a federal Department of Peace, supported reparations for slavery, called Trumpism a symptom of an illness that the American psyche, in the American psyche that cannot be cured with political policy, and she has also promoted dubious or debunked medical theories, particularly on mental illness. So that is...
That's Marianne Williamson.
And then lastly, on the third party ticket is Cornel West, professor and progressive activist who would be 72 on Inauguration Day. So what's that quote? The greatest generations of the greatest minds of our generation, folks. Here it is.
The greatest minds of somebody else's generation are ready to be president. Tammy and I were talking about this on the phone last night, preparing for this, and we were like, "Is it like it too embarrassing to be president if you're like under the age of 50? Is that what's going
cringy.
On?
It's too cringy.
Everybody's like, or maybe everybody's just too worried about." Am I ever going to own a home? I can't think about it. I'm going to be spending so much time away from my dog, you know?
And we see what happens.
It'd be a lot.
You'd be like jet-setting around on Air Force One. I mean, look at Bo, you know?
Yeah.
Who raised Bo?
The Obama's dog?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that being a big deal.
Do like people under 40 just not like planes? Maybe that's part of it.
No, don't tell the Instagram models.
Spending too much time on TikTok. These younger generations, they're spending too much time on TikTok to run for president. Back in my day, people died at 40.
Think of all the avocado toast you can get.
Yeah, exactly. They'll make it for you if you make it to the White House.
Boom.
The ultimate incentive. I'm being facetious, you guys, just in case it wasn't clear.
Oh, yeah, running for
I personally would like to see some younger voices in the race.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that both parties are structured right now, it's like, who has name recognition? Who do people already know? Because we're basing it a lot more off of familiarity rather than, you know, are they a compelling person to become the president, you know?
Have you been, like, listening to any interviews by these people? Or do you have any folks who you think might actually make it to the real race?
Well, I don't like to hedge my bets,
sure.
You know? Especially because I got some I told you so's in my life. They're going to be like, Trump's on the ticket. Don't even worry about it. But yeah, of course, DeSantis, Pence has been in the news. I remember when Nikki Haley announced, and then I'm, you know, just amused to see Chris Christie back. Based on the Encyclopedia Britannica Googling I've been doing, it seems like he's just been writing books.
I can see that.
So, but he didn't like the Capitol riot. He distanced himself from Trump after that. So
there's a handful of folks here who are basically I'm not Trump, vote for me kind of vibes.
Yeah, I'm like Trump, but I didn't do an insurrection. So if that was your dividing line between voting for me or not.
Is that Trump light?
Trump light. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Trump zero?
Trump zero. Trump, they call it Trump zero so that men will drink it because men don't want to drink diet Trump.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think so. In terms of why it's called that, Diet Coke or Coke Zero.
Interesting. Boom, there it is.
Which, you know, having something with less sugar is fine. It's just... Anyway, let's not get into diet culture. Let's, shall we continue onward on our journey through the news headlines.
For sure. And the next thing that I do you want to go to the Supreme Court thing or the student loans thing?
Do student loans. We'll do both of them quick because we want to make sure we get to.
Boom. Student loan forgiveness initiative has been kind of under attack. And when preparing for this, I was like, I'm going to make a timeline because it's a lot of information coming in at once from a lot of different news sources. And, you know, you kind of said something about headlines. Just things get lost in the headlines because there's just so much information and so many ways to consume it. So on June 1st, Congress passed a joint resolution under the CRA, that's a Congressional Review Act, meant to halt Biden's student loan forgiveness plan, which would provide up to $10,000, and I heard in some cases even $20,000.
Yeah, it's 10 to 20, depending on what loans you have.
To borrowers and nullifying the extension of the current student loan pause, which stopped payment and froze interest for most federal student loan borrowers since March 2020 and was extended last December. Yeah. Now, that was June 1st. On June 3rd, Biden signed a bill that would raise the debt ceiling. We all heard of that. As part of the negotiation agreement to raise the debt ceiling, Biden agreed to end the student loan pause after this summer. And this would be different to the CRA in the sense that it will not retroactively reverse the last extension. It just codifies that student loans will pause at the end of 60 days after June 30th, which was kind of...
So people will have to start paying their student loans again on August 31st, right?
Yes.
Or it might be like August 28th, which I don't know how the 60 days works out.
Which they did kind of imply, you know,
that was their last date anyway. Yeah. When the emergency order for COVID was rescinded, mm-hmm. they're like, all right, we're pausing it till August just so the Supreme Court can say if we're cool or not.
And that's exactly where we are right now. That's exactly where we are right now. But then more recently this week on June 7th, Biden vetoed the CRA, which was a House joint resolution, which 64 Republicans co-signed on. And I'm like, oh, let me just, sorry, 90, I don't know what I just said. 94 Republicans, which was really mind-blowing to me. Cause
is that the debt ceiling bill or that's the anti-student loan?
That's the anti-student loan one, yeah. So he vetoed that, even though it did, you know, it made it all the way up to the president. He vetoed it.
Why is it that the one bipartisan thing we can cooperate on is screwing over student loan borrowers?
For some reason, I thought this would be the one thing that where they're like, oh, yeah, these students,
it's the easiest mm-hmm. win of all time. And Republicans should just be mad that they didn't come up with it. Like, it's a slam dunk. Being able to come back to your constituents when you have to run mm-hmm. again in a year and say, I voted for you to have less debt. That's meaningful. That to a lot of people, it's like, that is actually concretely something that my senator or my representative mm-hmm. did for me, was to have me have less debt. And huge.
It's really, I saw when I was looking around online, I saw all these student groups that had actually made these petitions and sent them off to their representatives that was telling people to vote against Resolution 45, which is the one that was calling.
Let it be known that any group of people can work against their own interests.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's
just because you're independently wealthy and went to a state school.
All of this info of who it is, it's like all out there. It's really just embarrassing to think.
Yeah.
Like this is, I don't know. It's and also I'm just gonna say this. I'm gonna get off my high horse real quick.
Well,
though,
do whatever you
on
feel.
It real quick. The fact we were told if you don't go to college, you will die. You know, like that. Yeah. I don't remember anyone ever saying there are other options or anything. Like we were told you have to go,
you go to college.
That's
you want
it.
A good life,
There's
you go
no
to college.
Option. And I don't know. And so this is just really disappointing. Ben Biden did make a declaration, like a video, and he's like, "No, I'm vetoing this." So that was pretty cool. So wanted to wake that up, and so that was a week of a lot of interesting stuff. And I think that obviously they're all very much related to one another. And I think the more that I'm looking at the dates, like for the resolution to take away the student loan forgiveness plan. It was percolating back in May, so
yeah.
And the debt ceiling has been—I mean, it was raised 2 days before the shutdowns, you know. So it just seems like there's a lot of politicking and a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see, and it's still kind of up in the air. While the extension is ended, we're going to see what the Supreme Court says. Maybe,
yeah.
Hopefully before the end of this month. So,
well, speaking of the Supreme Court,
uh-oh.
A surprising decision that came down yesterday, I think, or maybe yesterday.
Yep.
The Supreme Court actually upheld part of the Voting Rights Act, I believe Section 2, and ruled that Alabama's congressional redistricting plan was an illegal racial gerrymander to suppress the power of the black vote in Alabama because the legislature drew these new lines. I don't want to get into the whole, like, how do you racially gerrymander, or, you know, you can also politically gerrymander, but there's this thing called packing and cracking.
Mm.
Where they will pack, you want to suppress the power of the black vote. This is an informational video now. So you don't want black people to be able to elect their preferred representatives. How do you do it? Or you don't want to make sure they don't have a majority. How do you do it? Even if they are a majority of the population, you pack them into like super majority districts. And mind you, Jared, the way that they draw the lines, it's goofy. It's a whole, like, the whole legal backing of it is wild. But anyway, you pack black voters into so that there's 90% in a few small districts, and mm-hmm. then separate out so that there's 2-3% in like 20 other districts, so that you, instead of, you know, if they're like 80% of the population in a given area, they actually only have maybe 10% of the seats because of the way that the districts are drawn. So basically giving black voters very little chance to elect representatives of their choice in a racially polarized state. And would you believe that Chief Justice John Roberts and good old Brett Kavanaugh said, yeah, the Voting Rights Act, we're gonna stick by that one. Mm-hmm. Which the last case about the Voting Rights Act was Shelby County v. Holder in 2015, which like gutted Section 5, I believe, preclearance. So the Voting Rights Act has kind of been hanging in the balance ever since. Mm-hmm. And mind you, Shelby County v. Holder was basically sending it back to Congress being like, just fix this thing and the Voting Rights Act is fine. That's a lot of what the Supreme Court does, is like, hey, this and this doesn't work. Rework it slightly, and they'll telegraph. They'll be like, hey, this fix these things, and the Voting Rights Act is cool, and we can have all of the things that the Voting Rights Act has protected and gotten us over the past however many years. 70? But anyway, surprising to have them vote with the liberals. I saw the discourse on Twitter being like, hey, maybe bullying works. Like, everybody questioning the legitimacy of the Supreme Court has, Brett Kavanaugh and Justice John Roberts at their dinner parties in Bethesda, Maryland, getting embarrassed by the ladies of like, hey, don't, you guys are embarrassing, you know, they've made a lot of embarrassing decisions. But yes, glad to see this, you know, sometimes sprinkle in a little bit of, hey, something, the worst thing didn't happen. That's cool that the Voting Rights Act is still being upheld.
They said, I can excuse suppressing women's health care, but I draw the line at voters' rights.
I can excuse sort of gutting the right to privacy, but I draw the line at suppressing voting power.
It's good to know that there are boundaries.
Yeah, it's complicated. Okay, we're going local now.
Here it is. Focus silently in.
Portland City Council voted on Wednesday to enact a daytime camping ban, among other things. Boy, howdy. Also, you know, for me personally, it happened at like 5:35, which is like just I couldn't catch it
right,
to like announce it for the newscast. So I was personally annoyed by that as well as by the vote. It was 3-1. Mingus Maps was out of town. He could have voted in absentia, but he just decided not to, but released a statement saying like, no, I'm on board. I'm just not voting for it. I'm just don't feel like voting today. And Carmen Rubio was the lone dissenter. This does a lot of things that are very troubling. Some of them are not new, of course. A lot of them are not new. Criminalizing homeless people, arresting them for existing is already a thing that's happening. But this, you know, they've re-upped on that intention in a way that is almost certainly going to get the city sued, because while they say that it is to get city policy in line with Oregon House Bill 3115, which goes into effect on July 1st, it's like completely the opposite of what that bill was about. It was when our now governor, Tina Kotek, was the Speaker of the House. She passed this, she helped to lead the passage of this bill that was intended to reduce the criminalization of homelessness across the state and try to bring, you know, whatever policies that cities, states, localities are making about quote unquote survival activities. So that's sleeping, lying, sitting down, keeping warm or keeping dry on public property, trying to bring those in line with the 2018 circuit court case Martin v. Boise, which basically says you can't sweep people off of city property if they're camping there as an unhoused person if you don't have sufficient shelter beds to accommodate them. So the state level action was to bring us in line with this circuit court ruling that has jurisdiction over the Ninth Circuit Court, which includes Oregon and Washington and Idaho, I believe. That's not that important part of it. But now that it's coming into effect, Wheeler has said that that's what this is about, but they're almost certainly going to get sued because it makes no sense. It also puts the police in a position to proactively enforce the law, which is not something that police are doing a lot of the time. I guess maybe jaywalking. They're like, we see it, we say it. But right, so if somebody is camping between the hours of 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., lying down on any kind of sleeping matter, if they're like staying in their car, if they have bike parts lying around, these are all things listed in the measure between 8 a.m. Yeah, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. It's not, so there's two warnings, and then you either get $100, you get arrested and either have to pay a $100 fine or serve 30 days in jail. And it asks the police to be proactive about it. So it isn't even that, you know, somebody's calling like, hey, there's an unhoused person in the park, or hey, there's a tent set up on the corner of this and this. And it's not even that there's like conspicuous drug use or that they can see that somebody is doing something. It is that it's proactive. It's, I suspect that you might be homeless. You look like you could be homeless, and you're just walking around, or you're sitting here, or you're laying on a blanket, you know, and therefore you're gonna get a warning, or I'm gonna arrest you.
Starting That's so July terrifying. 1st. I'm just thinking, like, all right, cool. Next time I, you know, go to the park, I better put on like a suit or something. God forbid I sit on a bench and look in any way.
God forbid I, you know, didn't shower recently.
Oh my God, people who are dealing with, you know, housing instability come in all, you know, like, just look different, you know,
everyone
looks different and are at different levels of struggle
and
dealing with different elements, you know, and it just feels like going backwards. We've had so many conversations about how, A, this isn't the cop's job to respond to, like, a mental
cops
health
as social
issue.
Workers
and
patently doesn't work.
The community said it.
Yeah.
Department of Justice said it. You know, like, this is kind of a conversation that has been had.
Yeah.
And somehow it's like it just was thrown out the window and now we're back to square one. But even more so because it just came back even harsher and stronger.
Yeah.
Like, think of all, with all the respect to Portland, you know, there's a lot of hippies here.
Mm.
I'm just imagining, like, you're hanging out and there's people testifying in City Hall were saying, so what about if you're hammocking at Laurelhurst?
Yeah.
You know, what about if you're having a picnic at Peninsula?
Yeah.
What about if you're hanging out at Unsay? Like, what is this? Are you kidding me? This is...
Is that...
That's who...
You can't bring a blanket to the park. And yeah, I think connecting it to that entire history that, you know, the 2014 DOJ settlement that found that Portland police use excessive force on people in mental health crisis, like killing people. And that's why, and we're still under it because the the Portland police cannot stop abusing people long enough to get us out from under the DOJ settlement. Then there's also the whole, like, part of the whole reason that Portland Street Response mm-hmm. was created was to get this sort of, like, we just don't want this person around out of the way of police who just keep shooting people. You know, they're not trained to, and in no way has this ever, there's no evidence that this kind of proactive policing gets people connected to services. It's also, city leaders didn't talk to the daytime shelters that are available in the city to get their thoughts or anything about this. So now they're going to be entirely overwhelmed in terms of capacity. Mm. Also, camping during the day is sometimes is like a fact of life for women and other marginalized folks who are unhoused because it allows them to be awake at night, mm-hmm. vigilant towards the violence that they are too often being it's being perpetrated against them, and that, like, sleeping during the day is a matter of safety, you know.
You know that feeling you get when you, like, get out of your car and you maybe park, like, maybe a block away from your house or something, or apartment, and you're just kind of like, oh, let me just, like, kind of do a quick jaunt back to the house.
Yeah.
You might, you know, kind of looking around. It's maybe dark, mm-hmm. 1 a.m. or something. And then, you do the thing where, like, oh, my God, zombies are chasing me. And then you kind of open the door really quick, you know. Then you get in, and that sigh of relief, you're like, oh, okay, I'm home. There are people who do not experience that at all.
Hmm.
A whole 12 hours, 10 hours, 8 hours of nighttime, complete darkness.
Yeah.
With no relief in sight of, mm-hmm. like, I'm in my sanctuary, I'm in my space, I am in a place that if someone came into it, I have, hello, 911, okay, they might not show up, but the fact that you have a space where you are empowered and your rights are amplified because you have connection to property, basically, you know?
Yeah.
And the people, that's terrifying. And yeah, and hearing the testimony from people who are unhoused, people who are, that work in the shelters, people who are just activists, it's really, it was really heartbreaking. And there was one testimony that was talking about how they've tried something like this in Austin, Texas,
mm-hmm.
and that all it really did is make people go out further away from the city limits, and that makes access to
services
just that much harder. And then they can't go find them. Folks aren't traveling into the city.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can just imagine. And if everyone is so concerned about, you know, drug issues, okay, then folks are just going to die in the woods, you know?
Yeah.
Folks aren't going to get Narcan. Folks aren't going to get, like, clean, you know, anything, you know?
Yeah.
It's really terrifying. And yes, I think that all the discourse that I've seen online was definitely like, oh, someone's getting sued. Lawsuit is a brewing.
And I just, it makes me angry that, like, I'm glad that there is that recourse. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that there is some existence of agreement of this is, like, patently wrong and will be challenged and the city will lose,
mm-hmm.
but that's a waste of taxpayer dollars.
Mm.
And I'm not, and this is not, like, it's never been the argument that we should do nothing about people. Like, people clearly need help, you know, we clearly need a solution. Clearly what's going on isn't enough. And it hasn't ever been enough, right? It's a multifaceted problem that we should really try to be addressing. But criminalizing people mm-hmm. for existing during daytime hours? Whoa. Wow. Doesn't feel like that's part of it. And now you're wasting taxpayer dollars. And also the you know, hard-earned dollars of, like, the advocacy groups that are going to have to fight this in court. Mm. And you're wasting everybody's time tying it up in something that can't be enforced in the first place because it violates federal court precedent in state law. So what are we even doing here, you know? In no world, and, like, that they had hours and hours of testimony and people being like, are you kidding me? Also, we got a comment on Instagram. Do you want to hear it?
Sure, go for it.
This is from Relationship Gardening. They say, it's Ted and friends' new housing plan for the unhoused and those repairing bikes, arresting them. Also, if you want to go to jail, just change your bike tire on the sidewalk.
Oh!
Bike parts were, like, mentioned many times.
I saw this. It was, this policy also limits what people can do with their camping spots. Cannot build a fire, use gas heat, build temporary structures, litter or dig into the ground, camping location. They're also prohibited from disassembling or selling more than 3 bikes or more than 2 cars, a rule meant to address number of shops associated.
So a lot of it is also where people can camp, period. They put a lot of restrictions on. And the director of the Oregon Law Center is like, hey, I read Oregon statutes for a living. I would have literally no idea how to comply with this law the way that it's written. Mm. So what are we building a maze and a trap for? You know what I mean? Just so that people walking around, like, just so that we can invite people back to downtown. Like,
or maybe, I
don't know.
Asserting this much, or imposing this much force and power. I don't know, I'm just thinking of, like the, you know, thinking of, like, statistic and numbers and who, what do, yes, please,
sorry,
go ahead.
Statistic and numbers. Between 2017 and 2020, according to data gathered by Reveal, 50% of people arrested in Portland were houseless, despite making up 2% of the population.
Mm.
Continue.
And within...
Staggering!
And within those... I don't know, man. Just, like... I don't know. Like, it's... As a black person, that's really terrifying to me, you know? Like, I'm like, okay, I gotta look really polished walking around. Oh, God, I can't... I gotta fix the bumper of my car, you know? I'm just, you know, thinking of... So as a person who's not dealing with housing insecurity, I can sense some sort of pressure as this, you know, it's like a pressure of you have to comply to a type of respectability. And now the respectability bar has been raised, and this is what everyone has to look like and has to do. And, oh, what are you doing? Changing your bike tire?
What did your chain slip off?
You know what? What do you have? What do you have, a bike that doesn't work? What do you have, a bike that's cheap? Well, go get a better bike so you don't have to do this.
Yeah. Or I'll get a better bike or I'll fine you $100. Boom. You can spend 30 days in jail.
And it's really terrifying, you know? I think of, like, students, you know? Mm-hmm. And you barely see people. Like, I remember as a kid, I used to hang out in the street and, you know, play and, you know, whatever. Kids, I'd barely see kids hanging out in the street as it is. When I do, I see, you know, like, a group of teenagers, like, oh, cool. They're like doing what we used to do. And I just think, like, why they are now more likely to get harassed by cops. They'll be like, what are you, street kids? Like, no, they're just teenagers, you know?
Yeah.
Or
kicking a can down the road.
Yeah, you know, or, like, punks that walk around with, like, mohawks and studded vests, you know? It's like, well, you don't look like how you're, quote-unquote, supposed to, so
you're carrying multiple bags. What, are you going to sleep here?
You know, what about if you're coming? I walk to the market. I walk to the market for Shabbat because I can't drive. I walk back with bags on me, with tote bags. Is someone going to be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I came back grocery shopping? Like, this is, I don't know, but I'm looking forward
it
for this
creates,
lawsuit.
It creates so many more problems than it solves. And just, like, to look at the problem that we're having and say that, like, the solution should be that these people need to be gone. It's like, well, where do you want them to go? Oh, jail? Rather than housing, which is cheaper? Ugh, I can't even get into all the ways that it's... It's really a frustrating topic that people have a real dearth of compassion about. Mm. And this is, it's a law that we have to take seriously, but it is moronic and not solutions oriented. And you're immediately going to, like, it would be, I would even have a little bit more respect for it if it didn't, like, blatantly, clearly, obviously violate state law and federal court precedent. Like, you're just immediately going to get sued and waste a bunch of people's time and give people, like, more anxiety, more reason to not want to be here, more reason to be afraid of seeking out help, seeking out services, because what if it means that they're getting warned, fined, arrested?
And I'm thinking of a person, you know, we had the ERA folks on a while ago. I'm just thinking of, imagine someone sitting in eviction court, you know, let's say a week or so before this law kicks in, you know, goes into effect, and all of a sudden they hear, oh, you just got evicted.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I now, on top of being evicted from my place where I was living, I now have to, a law that will put me in jail if I'm visibly unhoused somewhere.
Right. Breaking, and the other thing is, like, just breaking down a camp. If you've ever gone tent yeah. camping, it's a hassle. And there are people out here unhoused who are with who have disabilities, mm-hmm. who are elderly, who can't have to like pick up and carry all of your stuff every day. It's a wild thing to ask. And it'll be even wilder when we get to colder weather. I'm looking at the time, and I'm seeing that we need to have our musical break and go to our community question. I want to thank everybody who's tuned in so far. This is The Gap on KBOO Portland. I am Althea. Tammy's here with me. We're going to take a quick little musical break, and we'll come back with our questions. See you in a moment.
A little bit of Beastie Boys in the morning here in KBOO Portland. You are listening to The Gap, and we are going into our second half of the show. Lines are open for you to call in for our community question. Althea, would you like to set it up?
Yes, of course. I would love to. Our community question today is, how do you handle it when two people in your life are in conflict? How do you play mediator, or how do you stay out of it? Let us know, 503-231-8187. We'd love to hear your thoughts. I apologize. I'm out of breath. I was moving the air conditioner, and dang it,
We had to take a picture of it.
I'll put it on our Instagram story. It got untaped from the ceiling, you guys. And can I tell you, a couple of days ago, I was up there trying to tape it.
Well, you're going to be right back up there taping it again. At least you know how to do it.
I don't know how to do it. It keeps breaking.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
I just want to be a little less sweaty for you guys. You know what I mean?
If there's a listener out there who might know a thing or two about adhesives, come on over to the station. We desperately need your help. 503-231-8187 is the phone number to call for the community question, which is, how do you handle when two people in your life are in conflict? How do you play mediator, how do you stay out of it?
Yeah.
Ooh, how do you stay out of it? I like that. Avoiding things? I like that. 503-231-8187.
Yeah, let us know what you think. You can also message us on Instagram if you would like, at The Gap Radio. I am monitoring that. If you want to chat to us there, we would be glad to see it. How do you handle it, Tammy?
I take the fifth, I guess, with just staying out of it. Well, when you asked this, I was wondering, is it like, let's say, two people in my life that I know, or two people in my life who I just stumble upon? Like, if I see two people maybe at it doing stuff. But I don't, that's a good question. I don't think I've ever played mediator.
I am like hardwired to do it. My brain is like, everybody needs to get along all the time. Even these people that are like only kind of know each other through me, and like they're not happy with each other. I need to fix it. I need to you know. And so I have been working on not doing that as much. But I think, you know, the most productive is to like hear both sides out. But it's hard because it's like, you know, you want to, you know, listen and validate and like, oh yeah, no, that makes sense. I understand why you're upset. But to not be able to do anything about it, I feel like is hard for me. I don't know if that makes sense or resonates with other people. But I get, people in conflict, my family in conflict with each other. My brain's like, get in there. Get in there. Sort it out. Who's doing what? What happened? I need the facts.
Do you find yourself choosing sides?
Occasionally, I try to do it. I mean, it depends on if there's like an obviously right and an obviously wrong side, or if it's just like, I think that there's like a misunderstanding that has everybody activated at the moment. But I used to be very much like on somebody's side, campaigning for a specific cause, interpersonally, which I'm happy to do that politically. But now, like interpersonally, I've found that it's a little bit less productive.
I'm like, I don't think I've ever been in like a group situation. It just, if there's conflict, we're like, okay, well, we're just picking sides and this friend group is over.
503-231-8187. Let us know what you think.
There's got to be a healthier way of maneuvering through life.
There's got to be something else that we can tackle this with. Let us know what you think. 503-231-8187. What do you do when two people are in conflict, not necessarily with you, but you're there and they want to tell you about it? And I'm also sort of asking to get better ideas for myself of how to be productive without meddling, you know? Because then sometimes it goes worse and it's like, oh, I don't know that I helped. I just like felt like I needed to be involved.
Interesting.
As opposed to just, sometimes you got to just let people feel their feelings.
Mm.
You can't make them feel any differently than how they feel. And maybe that'll change over time.
I wonder, it just seems like such an interesting role to assume and like take upon yourself,
yeah,
and like thrusting yourself into other people's drama. It sounds like a bad thing to me. Even I know that it's not, because there's a word for it. It's called mediation, and it's a thing, and it's better than...
Well, that's when you're trained.
It's better than litigation.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems like a, like, I don't know, like maybe it's a cultural thing. It's like, I don't know. It just seems like almost like ethically wrong for me to do, even though like I'm learning more and more that it's definitely not, and that again, like you said, it's a whole field of work. And
yeah.
But I guess if people like reach out to you and they're like, hey, I know that you're friends with this person too, and are kind of having a hard time, and I was wondering if you'd sit down and talk to us? Is that what, like, that sounds so far-fetched.
I mean, it's less formal than that typically.
Mm.
503-231-8187. Sorry, give us a call while Tammy and I try to sort this out. Now we need someone to play mediator for you and me.
Oh.
No, I think it's more, it's usually, I guess in my experience, less formal. It's like, oh yeah, like this thing happened and I don't know what to do. And it's like, oh, this thing happened? Whoa, like what is going on, you know? Or trying to talk to people separately, or trying to figure out what happened, or, and I guess, yeah, sometimes when it's like, somebody's clearly in the wrong, it makes a little bit of a difference, you know, of like when morally you should intervene and be like, hey, that's not cool. Like, you're not gonna be cool with me if you continue to like keep doing that to our mutual friend or to, sure, you know, whoever in your family or what have you.
You know, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm taking it back, because when I think of like conflict, I think of like such a strong, you know, it's like a strong word,
yeah,
but I guess like maybe things aren't moving the way that they should, and maybe there's a person who is assuming that role of like not doing their part in having to do it. So I'm thinking in like a professional setting,
mm-hmm,
you know, in like a union setting too. There's, yeah, definitely ways of calling people in, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of calling people in, 503-231-8187. We'd love to hear your take on this.
Yes, please.
But I'm wondering how that plays out in like family dynamics, because it's, you know, it seems like there's a lot of set roles in a family environment.
Yeah.
Like, what about if the little sister gets in a fight with a mom, you know, and it's like,
If.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess. When, you know, and it's like.
It's when.
It's like, that's like, well, one of them made you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, you know. It's
yeah, Tammy, like, and I talk about this sometimes, about how strict is the hierarchy of, you know, parentage or age and stuff like that.
Like, even guidance, you know, like mentors and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what about if your mentor does something that, like, oh, that's like a big fear about, like, being in conflict with a mentor or something,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's hard. Also, this is like a little bit tangential, but it's very powerful to have like your parent, or if you're like an older caregiver or a mentor or something, if you're wrong in a situation with someone that's like, you know, your child or what have you, like, admitting that you're wrong is very powerful.
Mm.
Like, being able to have a conversation about it. Like, there are that's like moments where I was like, whoa, breakthrough. Like, whoa, that like made a big difference for me. It was like when a parent or a mentor was like, yeah, I didn't, you know, that thing that happened months ago that we were in conflict about, that was my bad, actually, and I'm sorry that I reacted that way, here's why, and I will not do it again, like, you were right. And it's like, whoa. That like lifts something off your spirit that you didn't even know was there.
I get that. Is that selfhood?
I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, conflict, mediation, they're like, I don't know why those words give me a little bit, I'm doing this, I'm raising my hand, as
yeah.
in, like, I don't...
I surrender,
I'm not guilty. I'm gonna play dead and...
No one has to know.
Ooh, the childhood trauma's kicking in. But staying out of it could also, you know, definitely have seen people, you know, like, do their thing and hash it out, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Like, when is there a coming back together?
Yeah.
And then it's important.
What, yeah, and then if it's, like, in a friend group, yeah, like, what is the group's responsibility for, like, taking care of that conflict? And then if there is a conflict and someone did, like, get hurt, what, like, how do we take care of that, too? I guess we're
yeah.
kind of in the waters of transformative justice and stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, and I think that that's not necessarily like a tool that a lot of folks grow up having,
mm-hmm.
you know, of like a coming, some kind of coming apart, some kind of conflict. Like, at what point does that bring you back together, whether that is your friends again or your acquaintances again, or you're just, hey, I just don't want to be mad at you anymore. Like, we're cool. Okay. Like, and being able to put up parameters and boundaries as a result of a conflict, you know, of like realizing like, hey, like, it really doesn't work for me to be close anymore.
Mm.
Or, you know, like, the broken trust, like, I know that I can't do that with you anymore, but I don't want to like harbor anger and I don't want to think ill of you. So let's just have a clean slate, you know? And then sometimes over time that can become like, no, you know what? Like, bygones are bygones, you know? A lot of people in this life, you're going to know them for a long time, you know? It's not going to be without frustration and strife and conflict.
As an Aries and as an only child,
yeah.
My first thing is like, oh no, you can burn those bridges and never look back. You'll have a whole fire behind you showing you the way where to never go back to. But it, as I'm trying to not, you know, do that, it's
sorry. I'm having a heart attack looking at the reflection in the window. I was like, what is there? It's the air conditioner.
Oh, there.
I was like, there's some kind of elf outside the window. It's so hot in here, you guys.
We again, if you are an adhesive specialist, if you have that
derailing such a nice conversation because I got so scared,
as they call the gorilla grip, please let us know. 503-231-8187. Either you're an adhesive professional or you'd like to tell us about mediation.
Yeah,
I don't we're know. Open to all.
Like, it's so scary, the reflection. I'm sorry. Let's go back to what you were talking about.
Yeah.
I'm crying. Can you mediate between me and the damn AC unit thing? Oh, God.
I would just... My mediation is that would just be like, kick it out the door and
yeah.
let someone else deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think... And then there's other people that are like, you know, they're like, well, sure, 17 bad things have happened to me because of this one person, but I'm not going to cut them out. And it's like, well, maybe you could just spend less time, you know, like there's extremes of the spectrum of like you wrong me once and I'm gone and you'll never hear from me mm-hmm. again, and you can wrong me as many times as you want to. It doesn't change my behavior at all, you know?
That triggered me thinking yeah. there are people who would just let themselves do that. But yeah, it's, I guess to have like a deep relationship
mm-hmm.
does it. It's like, you ever been to the Grand Canyon? I don't know if you have or haven't. Or like Painted Hills or something, where you see how the rock formed over the years, and there's like a line that's maybe a little bit more green, and then another line mm-hmm. that's a little bit more. And it's just like, you know, it's different things happen to that space, but it's yeah. still building, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It still exists. It continues to exist. Do folks want to call in? Please do. 503-231-8187. You can reach us in the studio and talk to us about what is your strategy, or how do you handle it when two people in your life are in conflict? How do you play mediator, or how do you stay out of it? We both need more thoughts on those things. So let us know. 503-231-8187. We would love to hear what you have to say. You can also message us on Instagram at The Gap Radio. We can take comments there too. And yeah,
we have Camilla on the line. Camilla, how are you on there?
Good. I feel kind of dogmatic about this question, because I think the only thing that you really can do is to listen.
Mm.
I think if you think about it, any attempt to intervene, just from a mathematical point of view, chances are very high that you're going to mess things up even worse. You're going to find yourself triangulated with two different sides, and you're going to be manipulated, trying to favor one over the other, and you're going to be in an impossible situation. But listening, that's meaningful, just to know that you can be there for somebody, and they can feel like they're heard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe as they're explaining to you what's going on, without your giving them any commentary, they might be able to realize that, you know, perhaps what they're saying to you is not so logical after all, or maybe they need to reconsider.
Yeah, active listening is very important. And that's like, I think you're right about that being like the one action that will always be a step in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think you can be pretty confident that any attempt to stick your foot in it is going to end up with some unforeseen consequence.
Yeah. I haven't learned that one yet, but I appreciate the, you know, yeah. the wisdom.
Yep, it never proved itself to work out, so definitely got to remember that. Thank you, Camilla.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Have a good morning.
You bye too. Bye. Take care.
I also have a comment from our Instagram from @relationshipgardening. To our question says, as a relationship specialist, I'm noticing most people, even not clients, haven't learned good conflict skills at all. I wish all could learn as little as in school, even boundaries, how to set a limit, how to seek safe spaces and people's making a point to notice toxic relationships. A lot of teens wrangle toxic relationships and then get suicidal because they can't make them work.
Mm.
You need more clarity up front about what's healthy and what's not, how to set a limiting abuse line like Patricia Evans's work. I consulted once to transform an intentional community's communication. I started seeing how they communicated was just so much more motivated to make it work, yet reflected the habits of folks at large, like not following up with curiosity when someone is talking. It's like parallel sharing instead, and it drives people apart with less connection, less feeling heard or understood. Being curious just looks like a follow-up open-ended question, like, what's that like? And that's so true. A lot of times you're talking, waiting to relate it to another thing that you already know about.
Ugh. We have one more. Do you think we can squeeze in Harry's on the line?
Yeah, Harry, go quick, please.
Harry,
yeah,
you're on the air.
Following the last caller, instead of just listening, you can record. Pull out your cell phone and record them arguing, and then play it back to them.
Mm.
Oh.
That's World Star, I think, is what Harry is referring to. Good for you. I like that.
Thank you, Harry.
Thank you, Harry. Always a pleasure.
Well, we can't knock the power of recorded audio. We are here on the radio, after all.
Oh, Harry knows us so well. The first caller asking the question, letting someone just talk and then see if what they're saying is actually like even the reality of things.
Yeah.
That is, listen, number one thing I learned in therapy, I love making stuff up in my mind.
Yeah.
Reality, that's an afterthought for me. But yeah, if you're actually sticking to the thing and seeing like what is actually influencing you to, is it reality? Is it your anxieties? And then, yeah, but just having a space to talk it out. And then what the commenter said about the parallel.
Parallel talk.
That's, yeah. I'm going to watch my, I like that. I'm internalizing it. And I'm just going to ask leading questions.
I'm a big fan of asking good questions, personally.
Well, as you know, as people who ask questions for, you know, a living and, and hobbying and life.
And in our recreational time when we hang out on the weekends.
There's nothing like when someone says, that's a great question.
I haven't thought of that. I love it.
Yes.
That is like, that's what keeps me going. You tell me I asked a good question, I'm riding high for the next couple of days.
Shout out to Relationship Gardening.
Yeah, thank you.
Maybe we can get a little therapist up in the show.
Yeah,
okay?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, we're about out of time. I want to thank everybody for listening to The Gap on KBOO Community Radio. I'm Althea. Tammy's been here with me. Thank you for folks who called and commented on our show today. If you like stuff like this, kboo.fm/give, consider sharing your wealth with us at KBOO with a little donation. Or you can also text KBOO to 44321. We really appreciate everybody, and we hope you have a fabulous weekend.
See ya.
Bye. Girls, we run this.
Radio's greatest application is in broadcasting mass entertainment. Probably one of the best ways to get started is to make it a hobby and build an amateur station. It will show you more quickly than anything else whether or not you can succeed in radio.
KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us and send a donation anytime at KBOO Radio. That's at KBOO Radio. Thanks.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/KBOOMRadio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/KBOO.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/KBOO Radio.
We also provide content to the free music archive.